Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're going to be looking at West Virginia v. EPA. You know, a case that really just kind of shook up the legal landscape back in 2022. And you know, it seems like it's got everybody talking still, especially you, because you sent us a ton of material on this one. So clearly you've been giving this some thought. Let's dive in.
Yeah, you know, it's what's so fascinating about this case is it seems like at first it's, you know, just a technical debate about, you know, power plant emissions. But when you really start to dig in, it goes so much deeper than that. You know, it really boils down to a very fundamental question about American governance. Like, who gets to decide on the big issues, you know, the ones that really impact the whole country? Is it Congress through very specific laws, or is it agencies like the EPA, you know, through their interpretations of existing laws?
Right. So we're talking about a lot more than just, you know, the EPA and regulating pollution here. This has implications for like all sorts of federal agencies, right?
Absolutely. I mean, think about it like this. Congress, you know, passes a law about traffic lights, but then the Department of Transportation uses that law to, you know, completely ban all cars from city centers.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the kind of overreach that the major questions doctrine at the heart of this case is really designed to prevent.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the Clean Power Plan. That was Obama's attempt to cut carbon emissions from power plants, right?
Exactly. The Clean Power Plan, we'll call it CPP for short,
okay,
was a key part of the Obama administration's whole climate strategy. And the EPA wanted to use its authority under the Clean Air Act to basically shift electricity generation away from coal and toward cleaner sources like renewables. You know, they call it generation shifting.
Okay, generation shifting. Sounds like a pretty good idea in theory.
Yeah.
But I'm guessing that's where the legal challenges kind of came in, right?
Yeah, you got it. Opponents argued that this whole generation shifting idea went way beyond what Congress ever intended when they passed the Clean Air Act. And they really zeroed in on Section 111 of the Act, which the EPA was using to justify the CPP.
Okay, so what's so important about Section 111? Why is everybody so hung up on this?
Well, the Supreme Court ultimately ruled that this section was meant to be a gap filler, you know, a way for the EPA to regulate very specific pollutants from existing sources. It wasn't meant to be a blank check for, you know, massive systemic changes, like forcing a shift in how the entire country generates electricity.
Right.
Chief Justice Roberts had a great line about this in his opinion. He said that Congress doesn't hide elephants in mouse holes. Basically, if Congress wants agencies to make, you know, really huge changes, they need to be very clear about it.
So the court was basically saying, like, EPA, you can't just reshape the entire energy sector without a direct order from Congress. And that's where this major questions doctrine comes in, right?
Precisely, yeah. The major questions doctrine basically says that for really, really big decisions,
yeah,
you know, the ones with massive economic and political ramifications, agencies need crystal clear permission from Congress. They can't just, you know, reinterpret existing laws to justify sweeping changes. And the court found that the EPA overstepped its bounds with the CPP and violated this doctrine.
Now, hold on a second. Didn't the CPP get repealed before this case even reached the Supreme Court?
That's right. Yeah, the Trump administration had already replaced the CPP with their own, you know, less ambitious, affordable clean energy rule. So technically, yeah, the CPP was defunct when the case landed in front of the justices.
Okay, so that makes this even more interesting. Why would the Supreme Court even bother ruling on a policy that wasn't even in effect anymore?
Because the Biden administration had hinted that they might try a similar approach to regulate power plant emissions, you know, so the court saw this as a live controversy with big implications for the future, not just a debate about a dead policy.
Right.
You know, it was actually a pretty smart move by the court to kind of think ahead like that, because this case really set a precedent for how agencies will be allowed to handle, you know, major issues going forward.
So this is a much bigger deal than just the EPA and carbon emissions. Mm. The court basically put all federal agencies on notice with this ruling. Is that right?
Absolutely. It's like they drew a line in the sand and said, okay, agencies, you have a lot of power, but you can't go this far without explicit instructions from Congress. And that's a big part of the reason why this case has sent shockwaves through the legal world and why, you know, we're still talking about it today.
This all sounds pretty straightforward so far. But I know that the court was actually divided on this decision. So let's talk about those dissenting opinions.
Right. Yeah. To fully grasp the tension and the nuance of this decision, we need to look at the concurring and dissenting opinions. Justice Gorsuch, for example, wrote a very strong concurring opinion.
Yeah.
He didn't hold back.
What was Justice Gorsuch's main point?
Well, he was deeply concerned about what he saw as agencies acting like, you know, roving lawmaking bodies, going beyond their intended role.
Right.
He argued that Congress needs to be in charge of major policy decisions, not unelected bureaucrats. And he saw the major questions doctrine as a crucial safeguard against this kind of regulatory overreach. He actually said, when Congress seems slow to solve problems, it may be only natural that those in the executive branch might seek to take matters into their own hands. So you can tell, you know, he's worried about agencies grabbing too much power.
So he was firmly on the side of limiting agency authority.
Yes.
Got it. But I know that Justice Kagan had a very different take on this.
Yeah. Justice Kagan wrote a really powerful dissent, and she argued that the court was overstepping its role and stifling the ability of expert agencies like the EPA to, you know, address critical issues like climate change.
Mm-hmm.
She argued that agencies like the EPA have the, you know, the scientific and technical expertise to address these issues, and that the court was basically becoming the decision maker on climate policy, a role she felt should belong to Congress or to the EPA.
Wow, you can really feel a tension between those two viewpoints, you know, like a real philosophical clash about the very role of government and the courts.
Yeah, it's fascinating, right? And it really highlights the profound implications of this seemingly technical case about power plant emissions. What seemed like, you know, just a narrow legal question about the EPA's authority has turned into this much broader debate about the balance of power in our government.
And we're just getting started. We've got the court striking down the Clean Power Plan, invoking the major questions doctrine, and this, like, fiery debate among the justices themselves. But how does all of this actually play out in the real world? You know, that's what I really want to know. What are the tangible impacts of this decision?
That's the key question, isn't it? And this case has had ripple effects far beyond just environmental law.
I bet.
And that's what we'll explore next.
Okay, so we've established that this case is a big deal, with implications reaching far beyond, you know, the EPA and climate policy. It's like West Virginia v. EPA threw a wrench into the gears of, you know, the whole administrative state.
It definitely did. And the ruling has left a lot of people wondering, you know, what happens now? How do we tackle these, you know, really complex, urgent problems if agencies are suddenly on such a short leash?
Yeah, it feels like we're stuck between a rock and a hard place. Because, you know, we need these agencies with the expertise to actually tackle, you know, issues like climate change. But we also don't want unelected bureaucrats running the show either.
Exactly. That's the tension at the heart of the administrative state, right? And West Virginia v. EPA has really brought that tension to the forefront. So where do we go from here? What are the possible paths forward?
Well, the ideal scenario, it seems like, would be for Congress to kind of step up and start passing more specific legislation.
Yeah.
You know, that clearly defines what agencies can and cannot do, give them a clear roadmap instead of expecting them to navigate by the stars.
I agree. That would be the most straightforward solution. But, you know, let's be realistic. The chances of Congress suddenly becoming, you know, like a well-oiled machine churning out perfectly clear legislation are pretty slim, especially in our current political climate.
Yeah. Gridlock seems to be the default setting these days. So if Congress isn't going to ride to the rescue, what's the alternative? Are we just stuck?
Not necessarily. Another possibility is that agencies become much more cautious in their rulemaking.
Okay.
You know, they might stick to very narrow interpretations of existing laws and avoid any bold moves that could trigger the major questions doctrine. Basically, they'll be playing it safe to avoid getting slacked down by the courts.
So instead of being proactive and tackling big problems head on, they'll be tiptoeing around, afraid to make any significant changes.
Yeah, it's a real concern. And that kind of regulatory paralysis could be disastrous, especially for, you know, urgent issues like climate change, where we need swift, decisive action. It's a classic catch-22. We need agencies to be proactive. But the court has made it much riskier for them to do so.
What a mess. So we've got Congress potentially staying gridlocked. Yeah. We've got agencies potentially becoming paralyzed. Is there any good news here?
Well, there is a third possibility.
Okay.
Which is that we see a surge in legal challenges to agency actions. Think of it as like a constant tug of war, with the major questions doctrine becoming the central battleground in administrative law.
So basically, a flood of lawsuits aimed at blocking anything agencies try to do.
It's a real possibility. And that could further clog up the legal system and create even more delays in addressing, you know, critical issues. It's like adding another layer of bureaucracy on top of everything else.
Ugh. Feels like we're sailing into uncharted waters here, you know? The old rules of the game have changed, and nobody's quite sure what the new playbook looks like.
That's a great way to put it. We're in a period of transition, and the long-term implications of West Virginia v. EPA are still unfolding. But one thing is certain, this case has sparked a major debate about the balance of power in our government. And it's a debate that's going to continue for years to come.
Okay, so we've got three potential paths forward. Congressional clarity, which seems unlikely. Agency caution, which seems problematic. And just legal battles galore, which seems messy. None of those options sound particularly appealing. But I want to go back to something you mentioned earlier about, you know, the ripple effects of this case going beyond environmental law. Can you give me some concrete examples of that?
Absolutely. You know, remember, this case wasn't just about the EPA and climate policy. The major questions doctrine has already been used to challenge all sorts of agency actions in a variety of areas. It's become a really powerful tool for those who want to limit the reach of the administrative state.
For instance, like we saw the challenges to the Biden administration's vaccine mandate for large employers, right?
Exactly. Opponents of that mandate argued that OSHA, the Occupational Safety and Health Administration, overstepped its authority by trying to impose such a sweeping requirement.
Right.
They pointed to the major questions doctrine, arguing that Congress hadn't given OSHA clear permission to regulate workplace safety in this way.
And the Supreme Court ultimately blocked that mandate, didn't they?
They did. And while the court's decision was based on, you know, narrower procedural grounds, the major questions doctrine played a key role in the legal arguments against the mandate. It signaled that the court was skeptical of agencies using their existing authority to implement, you know, really broad, controversial policies.
Okay, so the vaccine mandate is one example. What other areas have been impacted by this ruling?
Well, another high-profile example is the challenge to the Biden administration's student loan forgiveness plan. Opponents of that plan argued that the Secretary of Education lacked the authority to, you know, just unilaterally cancel billions of dollars in student debt.
Right.
They claimed that this was a major policy decision that required clear authorization from Congress, and they cited West Virginia v. EPA as a precedent.
And that legal battle is still ongoing.
Right. It is. And it's very likely to end up before the Supreme Court. It'll be fascinating to see how the justices apply the major questions doctrine in this context. Will they view student loan forgiveness as a major question that requires, you know, explicit congressional approval? We'll have to wait and see.
It seems like the major questions doctrine has become kind of like a Swiss Army knife for those who want to limit the power of agencies. It can be applied to all sorts of different situations.
That's a great analogy. It's become a very versatile tool for challenging agency actions across a wide range of policy areas, everything from healthcare and education to labor and the environment.
Okay, so this case has huge implications for, you know, lawyers, lawmakers, and really anyone who cares about how our government works. What advice would you give to our listeners who are trying to make sense of all this?
Well, for lawyers, I'd say pay close attention to the major questions doctrine and how it's being applied in different contexts.
Cool.
Understand the criteria the court is using to determine, you know, when an agency action triggers this doctrine. It's a rapidly evolving area of law, and it's essential to stay up to date.
And what about for lawmakers? What should they be doing differently in light of this ruling?
For lawmakers, I think the message is pretty clear. Be very clear and specific in the language you use when you're drafting legislation. Don't leave any room for ambiguity if you want to avoid legal challenges down the road.
Right.
If you want agencies to have the authority to act on a particular issue, spell it out explicitly.
Mm-hmm.
Don't rely on, you know, vague language or broad interpretations of existing laws. The court has made it clear that they're going to be scrutinizing agency actions much more closely in the wake of West Virginia v. EPA.
And for the rest of us who maybe aren't legal experts but are still trying to figure out how this affects our lives,
I would say stay informed. Pay attention to how this case is being used to challenge agency actions in areas that are important to you. The major questions doctrine is shaping the future of governance in this country. So it's crucial to understand how it works and what the potential implications are. Read news articles, listen to podcasts like this one, you know, and engage in thoughtful discussions with others. The more you understand about how our government operates, the better equipped you'll be to participate in the democratic process and make your voice heard.
That's great advice. Knowledge is power.
Mm-hmm.
Now, before we wrap up our deep dive into West Virginia v. EPA, I want to pose a final question. We've talked a lot about, you know, the potential negative consequences of this ruling, regulatory paralysis, legal battles, and so on. But are there any potential positive outcomes that we might see as a result of this case?
That's an interesting question. It's always important to look for the silver lining, even in seemingly negative situations. I suppose one potential positive outcome is that this ruling could force Congress to be more engaged in policymaking. You know, instead of punting the hard decisions to agencies, they might have to step up and provide clearer guidance on major issues.
So maybe this could lead to a more robust and accountable democratic process.
It's definitely possible. But it would require, you know, a pretty significant shift in the way our political system operates. Congress would need to overcome its tendency towards gridlock and start working together more effectively to address, you know, the complex challenges facing our country. And that's a tall order, to say the least.
I hear you. It's a long shot, but it's definitely something worth hoping for. Well, I think that's a great note to end on. You know, a little bit of optimism mixed with a healthy dose of realism. What do you think?
I agree. It's important to acknowledge the challenges while also remaining hopeful that we can find ways to make our government work better for everyone.
West Virginia v. EPA is a landmark case with far-reaching implications. And it's a reminder that the balance of power in our government is constantly evolving and that we all have a role to play in shaping the future of our democracy. You know, it feels like this whole conversation about West Virginia v. EPA has become a much bigger discussion about, you know, the future of our democracy and how we govern ourselves in a world that's facing, you know, increasingly complex challenges.
Yeah, you hit the nail on the head. I mean, it's not just about power plants or emissions anymore. It's about these really fundamental questions, you know, like who gets to make the big decisions? How do we balance, you know, expertise with accountability? What happens when our political system just struggles to keep up with rapidly changing circumstances?
Yeah, it can feel kind of overwhelming, honestly. But you've given us a lot to think about. If this case is kind of a wake-up call for all of us, you know, what can we actually do about it? How can we ensure that our government is truly responsive to the needs of the people?
Well, I think it starts with, you know, staying informed. Read news articles, listen to podcasts like this one, engage in thoughtful discussions, you know? Educate yourself about the issues that matter to you and really try to understand how government decisions are being made. Knowledge is power, and the more we know about how our government works, the better equipped we'll be to actually hold our leaders accountable.
So step one is to be informed citizens. Hmm. But what about actually making our voices heard? How can we effectively engage with our elected officials?
Oh, that's absolutely crucial. Write letters, make phone calls, attend town hall meetings, you know. Make sure your representatives know where you stand on the issues and don't underestimate the power of direct communication. Politicians pay attention to their constituents, especially when they're vocal and engaged.
And of course, there's always the power of voting.
Absolutely. Every vote counts. Elections have consequences. We need to choose leaders who prioritize the issues we care about and who will work to create a government that is effective, accountable, and truly responsive to the needs of the people. Don't just sit on the sidelines, get involved.
It's almost like this case, West Virginia v. EPA, has opened up this Pandora's box of questions about our democracy and the way we make decisions as a society. It's a bit daunting, but also incredibly important.
I couldn't agree more. It's raised these really fundamental questions about the balance of power, the role of expertise, the relationship between the people and their government. These aren't easy questions to answer, but they're questions we need to be grappling with collectively.
Well said. This isn't just a legal issue, it's a societal issue. It demands our attention and our active participation in shaping solutions. So to everyone listening out there, keep learning, keep questioning, and keep pushing for a better future. Your voice matters. Your actions matter.
Well said. West Virginia v. EPA is a landmark case that will continue to shape the legal and political landscape for years to come. But its ultimate impact will depend in large part on how we as citizens choose to respond.
That's a powerful message to end on. Thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us today. I always learn so much from our deep dives.
The pleasure was all mine. It's been a fascinating conversation, and I hope our listeners found it informative and thought-provoking.
And everyone who joined us for this deep dive into West Virginia v. EPA, thank you for listening. We encourage you to continue the conversation. Talk to your friends, family, and colleagues about the issues we've discussed today. Share your thoughts and insights, and together let's work towards a more informed and engaged citizenry.
Until next time.
That's a wrap on this episode of The Deep Dive. We'll see you next time for another deep dive into a fascinating topic.